Welcome to the Matthew Aaron Show. I am Matthew Aaron. www.thematthewaaronshow.com is where you can find our website, at Matt Aaron Show on Twitter. You can give us a follow there, and you get all the updates on everything we have going on. Also, you can follow us on Facebook. Go to the search bar, type in The Matthew Aaron Show, and you will go to The Matthew Aaron Show fan page where you click like, and you will then follow us on there. Get a lot of updates on The Matthew Aaron Show from Facebook. I can't believe 296 episodes in. This is still called The Matthew Aaron Show. It shouldn't be. It's about our guests, and they've been amazing. And if you follow on Apple Podcasts or Spotify Podcasts, you will see 290 some episodes just ready to go, right to your phone, to your laptop, wherever you listen to podcasts. And then finally, we're at Anchor.fm now. The Matthew Aaron Show's new home is Anchor.fm, and you can follow us there as well. Today, we have one of my favorite guests we've ever had on the show, and if you listen to the show regularly, there is occasional references to this guest. I will make an occasional comment about how great he is or his performance on a show or his directing. And We Go Green is premiering on Hulu. And that's going to be the new film that he directed, which I saw. And it's fantastic. And I know sometimes people are like, well, I don't know if documentaries are for me, but then you watch something like Tiger King, which Fisher Stevens did executive produce. He directed And We Go Green. He also directed Bright Lights, the Carrie Fisher, Debbie Reynolds movie that was on HBO that was fantastic. And then also Before the Flood. So, and Before the Flood was why he came on here the first time, and it was terrific. And he did that with Appian Way, with Leonardo DiCaprio, his company. And and We Go Green is also with DiCaprio's company as well. So I'm about to sit down with Fisher Stevens. June 4th on Hulu is when And We Go Green premieres, so that would be yesterday. I'm taping this Friday with Fisher, so it's on there now. You can watch And We Go Green now, which I'm sitting here going, why did I watch a screener when I could have just watched it on Hulu? I'm sitting there, I'm watching it on my phone, I'm like, boy, this movie looks gorgeous. Boy, this movie sounds gorgeous. I can't wait to watch it on my TV screen. And I'm just, dude, this has been a crazy week. I'm sorry if this opening is not as scripted as usual. It's been a crazy week, obviously with the protests going on, and with the fact of the matter that we have to change some laws in this country. We have to have some criminal justice reform in this country, and because of that, my brain is fried. I am super scattered and all over the place. So I just realized it's June 5th, and I could have watched And We Go Green right now on Hulu. And let me tell you something. You got to watch it on Hulu. But if you can get a great TV and sound system, please do, because this is a film about the Formula E Championship. And what that is it's electric cars, but it's like Formula One with electric cars, and it's incredible. It's been around since 2014, but I don't think a lot of people have heard about it. But you watch this documentary and you will be captivated, and it loses nothing from F1 racing. It loses nothing if you're a NASCAR fan. I do know F1 and NASCAR, different fan bases sometimes. But if you're one of those people that like both, you like fast cars, there is nothing not fast about Formula E Championship. So that's what we're going to be talking about, this film, And We Go Green, which is about the electric car championship. Such a relevant film, by the way. We're all here quarantined still for some of us. Some of us are just getting back out to life right now. And we have this opportunity from being quarantined. You saw how clean the air is. You saw clear skies. You saw what it could be like without carbon pumped into the air. The planet had a chance to rejuvenate itself a little bit. Now, I hope people don't think because of the quarantine, the planet rejuvenated itself for another 200 years. No. No, obviously not. We were quarantined for 2-3 months, but man, the air smelled fresh. Everything was so nice. It was really nice outside. So that's something we're going to talk about, and that's why this is important. If you can change the game to where NASCAR, F1 racing, but forget all that, if people just get the point that electric cars could be the future, and they are the future, I would argue we could make this world a way more healthy place, absolutely. Healthy for us and healthy for the planet. So check out And We Go Green. It's the Formula E electric car racing documentary. It's exciting. Fisher Stevens is a genius documentarian, and I'll tell you why. And I'm going to ask him about this because it just blows my mind that he's able to do this. But Fisher goes into this situation, and I'm doubting there's a script. I'm doubting there's a, because you don't know. You don't know who's going to win the races. You don't know how people are going to react throughout filming them. You don't know how these drivers are going to react throughout filming them. So what you end up getting is a better quality Days of Thunder. You get this movie that doesn't play like a documentary that talks to you. It plays like an action movie. That just so happens to have electric sports cars. So it's great. By the way, also produced by DiCaprio and Fisher Stevens, Christopher St. John, Jennifer Davison, Zara Duffy, executive produced by Rick Yorn and John Wilkes and Alejandro Agag. And I believe... This is our friend Fisher right now. Shoot. Of course, come on. I don't know how to do this. Hold on 1 second. Let's see if this was Fisher. If not, this is going to be a very funny recorded call.
Hello.
Hi, this is Matthew Aaron calling for Fisher Stevens.
Hi, yes. Yeah, hold on 1 second.
Thank you so much. This is exciting. I'm excited.
Okay, Fisher, you're on with Matthew Aaron.
All right.
Ooh, excuse me, you're on with Patrick, the producer. Yeah.
Hi, Patrick.
Oh, no, this is Matthew. You got straight to the source. Straight to the source.
Sorry.
Fisher.
Right to the source.
Right.
Matthew, how are you?
Good to hear from you again.
You too.
First of all, I have to take up a little something with you. The last time we talked before the flood, which I told you how much I loved, and the documentary you did about Carrie and Debbie, we were talking about the Cubs. And I filmed a movie during that time, a narrative, not a documentary, but I filmed a feature during that time, the year that they won the series with Tom Arnold and a few other people. And we were talking, and we said, you know, next time you're in town, we're getting a beer at a Cubs game. It looks like that's not happening this year. But what I'm shocked at is, where is the Fisher Stevens documentary on the freaking Cubs?
I know. It's ridiculous. I haven't done one.
Yes.
Obviously, the year to do it was the year, you know.
Sure.
On the series, I don't know, man. I've been trying to, you know, my first sporting doc is about race cars.
Yeah.
I never gave a shit about race cars. So. It's just unbelievable. I don't know how I missed the Cup.
Well,
Glenn Beckert, Ernie Banks, Don Kessinger, 69 Cups at least.
Oh, wow. I just want to be able to tell everybody once again, Fisher is a big Cubs fan. You as a child, you grew up here before you moved to New York,
yeah.
And I just wanted to congratulate you from one fan to another on that and that miraculous series, and we finally had our moment.
I do want to say one thing that haunts me to this day.
Yeah.
I was sitting there watching the final game.
Yeah.
And this guy turns to me and he goes, "You know what this means, right?" And I said, "What?" He says, "The Cubs won, but you know what this means?" I said, "No, it means Donald Trump's going to be the president."
Oh.
I went, "What does this thing have to do with the other?" He said, "Because it was a miracle the Cubs finally won, and there's always a price. There's always a price."
Oh, my God.
And that fucking guy haunts me. It haunts me.
Oh, well, you know what? We've been talking about that this week on the podcast. I had my buddy on. We were talking about Black Lives Matter with Jay Washington and then the protesting going on. And, you know, we have these two very important issues right now. And you kind of tackle it. But in the intro, I talked about And We Go Green, which is your new film on Hulu now. Yeah. And We Go Green is really for people that think you're going to be talked to with this documentary, you're not. This is an action documentary. I told people this is like Days of Thunder with better characters and better writing and you know, the directing and the sound, but I got to ask you because, man, did you luck out or what? There has to be a sense of luck for any documentary filmmaker. I always envy my documentary filmmaker brothers because you don't go in there with a script. You don't know how these four race car drivers are going to act when you film them or throughout a period of time. You don't know who's going to win the races. I mean, come on, that last 15 minutes of this movie, I'm not going to spoil it. But how do you not write that? So how do you go about filming a documentary that has no script? Do you write the script in post? I know some documentary filmmakers do. Give me an idea of the process here for And We Go Green.
Well, okay, so the one outline that we had was we were going to film season four. And season four was the final season of Formula E, where they are driving with two cars, or hopefully the final season, because it's the only motorsport in the world where they can't change they can't do a pit stop with changing the tires and the oil. And that. They have to change cars because there was no battery when we filmed that worked long enough that they could race one car for 40 minutes around, you know, the tracks. So we knew we were going to film the season and see if that new battery would work for the next season. Those were our two plot points. Other than that, we had no idea what we were going to do. I got really lucky, as you say. I decided before the season started, I interviewed all the drivers, which is when I decided to make the movie with Malcolm Bento, another great filmmaker, friend of mine, who knew about motorsport. I didn't know anything about. I mean, I knew Lewis Hamilton was a famous race car driver. I couldn't tell you who he drove for. I only knew who Michael Schumacher was because I knew he had a tragic accident. Mm. I didn't even know. So anyway, the one lucky stroke was that when I met Jev and Andre, the Tachita team, we just said, these are going to be two of our stars because they were just so interesting. Jev had such a fuck you attitude, such a cocky kind of French, wonderful. He was 10 years younger than Andre, who was his teammate, but he was Andre's basically his boss because Andre was a rookie. So you have a 37-year-old rookie who's won Le Mans, another huge race, three times, and this kid younger than him who's his boss basically, because each team has a leader and one driver and number two driver. So luckily we keyed on that team, and I don't want to give the movie away, but that team did very well. And so that was the first really lucky thing. And then the other lucky thing is Nelson Piquet Jr., who is someone that people who know NASCAR would know. Mm-hmm. His father won Formula One number of times, very famous. Nelson was thrown out of Formula One because his team boss said, if you crash and let your teammate win, we will we'll keep you on the team next year. And he did that and got thrown out, got caught. And we knew we had a great guy in this guy because he also had all these daddy issues. So anyway, we just picked those guys and we picked another guy. And that's a key to it. So then you start writing around your characters going, okay, let's follow them, see what happens. So, yeah, but the real finesse and the real writing and the real pain is at the end when you're cutting stuff.
Yeah, it has to be. Has to be. Yeah.
Characters. But yeah. You have to stay on point and you have to stay on or the movie just doesn't work.
Right. You have all these great scenes that end up on the cutting room floor because they don't any longer fit your narrative. Which is just what a great process documentary filmmaking is. It's such pure filmmaking. It is
wonderful. It is wonderful. And you don't have to wait for actors' availability.
Yeah. That's true too. I wanted to talk about, you said how you have no experience with esports driving. You didn't even have any experience with F1 or NASCAR. Did you suspect that the team that you were, who gave you the background on the team that you're going to follow? Was it that you had an idea these guys are going to perform at least in a way that's theatrical? Like this won't be a boring team to follow.
Well, the ringmaster, Alejandro Agag, who is the guy smoking the cigar.
Yeah.
The brains behind it kind of convinced me how great this movie could be because he's a genius salesman. He gave me like four names, and he said one of these four guys will probably win. And Jeb wasn't one of them. So it was like, Alejandro, I think this guy has got a shot. He's like, oh, yeah, but he's a very moody guy. He's very emotional. I don't think he can close the deal, you know. And, but Degrassi, you know, so he, this was season four. So the first three winners of the first three seasons, Alejandro gave me their names and Sam Bird. And he thought like one of those four guys. And Felix Rosenquist, who ended up really not even becoming an issue at all in the piece because he just kind of started out great and then he just faded. And I love Felix Rosenquist. He's a nice guy, but his personality, he's Swedish. He's very restrained and withheld. And honestly, he would not have been a great character. Mm. But we got really lucky that he didn't do well because,
you
didn't have to fake it. Yeah.
Right. You didn't have to make him your lead. And then you're like, oh, boy, but then people are going to fall asleep here. This is such an exciting movie. Look, we talked about this at the beginning before you called in. I am one of your biggest fans. Anyone that listens to this podcast knows that once a month at least you're going to get a Fisher Stevens reference out of me. I think you're one of the coolest actors of all time. I think it both helps that we both are not the tallest guys.
We're Cubs fans.
That's what I meant. But I've been following your career forever, and I also want to bring up your great work on The Good Wife, but I guess it's The Good Fight, and Succession. I mean, you just continue to do such great work as an actor. But my first thing I don't think of is action director Fisher Stevens, and this movie is directed with such finesse. I mean, you're like Tony Scott with this fucking movie. How did this happen?
I had a help.
Okay.
I mean, I had help. I mean, like, I worked with Malcolm Venville, who's a great commercial shooter, and he taught me so much about how to shoot while we were making it, you know. And I had some amazing cameramen, Tobias Schleisler, who shot Friday Night Lights.
It's gorgeous.
And, shoot Lonesome, the Mark Wahlberg movie. What was that movie?
Where he's the shooter, the sniper character.
Sniper.
I forget what it's called. Yes, but you're
Lone Survivor.
Yeah, and the Peter Berg one. Yeah.
And then Ben, the guy who worked with Tony Scott a few times and.
Oh, so you got Tony Scott people on your team. That helps.
I had two shooters that had worked with Tony Scott. Ben
Oh, wow.
And he shot Godzilla just now. I mean, but then, so that helps. And also, using anamorphic lenses, to be honest, which I had never done.
Yeah.
Ever. Because it's a car you're shooting, you want the wide frame for the car.
Mm-hmm.
And using the anamorphic lenses really upped my visual style for this.
Yeah, it looks great.
We were able to convince the investors to use it. So
awesome. That was awesome because this film looks. This is one of those films that you play in Best Buy when you want to sell the TV. Like, that's what I was thinking of when I'm watching this. I'm like, oh, this sells a TV. This sells a sound system. This is what a great looking picture. And that's why I'm telling people, I'm like, look, I know your first reaction to some people is, oh, I really care about climate control. I really care about the environment. I'm interested in this film. Or you're like, oh, Leonardo DiCaprio and Fisher Stevens, they do these documentaries about the environment. I don't want to be talked
right,
to.
Right.
Listen,
right.
It's not like that at all. This is a
right.
action movie. This is nonstop. I mean, the characters are rich. And I think you deliver your message perfectly while never talking down to your audience and never trying to sell them on something. You can watch it in the film. You're sold. I'm sold that electric cars are the way of the future just by watching this film. And I'm also sold, and I'm wondering if you agree, we've been quarantined the last few months, as obviously everyone knows. But have you noticed how clean the air's been?
Oh, yeah. I mean, my first thought when this started was like, the amount of CO2 going into the air from the airplanes and from the trucks and the deliveries and from the Ubers and in the big cities and the
yeah.
cars, it's incredible.
Yeah.
So I think they said something like the air was last month 17% less carbon in the air. That's a huge amount. So maybe we'll learn our lesson. You know, I hope so. You know, human beings seem to repeat the same shit. I mean,
yeah.
Who thought we'd have white cops kneeling on
yep.
black cops' throats
yep.
at this in 2020 and still not? It took this to fucking address social justice, you know. But you know, here's the issue, man. You got Mitch McConnell. You got all these senators.
Yeah,
these horrible
Lindsey Graham.
People
yeah.
That don't the Lindsey Graham that continue and the president
yeah.
continue to deny that climate change is an issue. But you know what? They're only doing it for one reason. They're being paid. They're
yeah.
funding their campaign. So it's so nauseating. And the beauty of working in Formula E is they're all European and
yeah.
South American.
Right.
And they all know. These drivers, they know climate change is an issue.
Yep.
They know it. Now,
yep.
they're not going out there, and you know, with the exception of Lucas Degrassi, one of the drivers, who basically could be a professor. We used to call him the professor. He could teach climate change. But
yeah.
most of them drive because they want to drive, but
sure.
they know about it. They understand it.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if you went into, you know, we got to make a change on so many levels.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm hoping that between COVID and between George Floyd's death, finally, and Breonna Taylor and all these people, that we finally make a change. And it's going to be a painful change. And we're going to go through some more unfortunate shit.
Well, what I'm really scared of.
I'm
a little worried, Fisher, because it's like how many black men and black women had to die before we decided to do something about it? And by the way, we're not done doing something about it. And Joe Biden's right. It's going to take my entire generation to really do something about it. So my fear, of course, is what terrible, awful thing has to happen to the environment that affects people, because I guess they don't understand that it's already been terrible and awful. What
right.
major event is going to have to happen to get everybody to care about the environment the way we're starting to at least finally care about each other?
I've been asking myself that for,
mm-hmm.
you know, 15 years, but I think, look, these storms are becoming more frequent. And now imagine you have a storm during the coronavirus.
Mm-hmm.
Where are people going to go?
Yeah.
What are they going to do? You know, this is going to be an intense summer. And it's not going to be a pretty summer. I mean, there, you know, we don't know what's going to happen with these storms this year. And unless you're affected by climate change, I mean, I got into climate change because I was a scuba diver. And I went into the ocean and I saw dead corals in places that with people that said these were alive 6-7 years ago. They're dead because the ocean is warming. And then I kept going to all these amazing places and seeing no fish and dead corals.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, I saw it firsthand. And obviously you're seeing it everywhere. But as long as the fossil fuel company, which is holding on by, you know, a thread, keeps funding these politicians, they're going to let them pollute and they're going to do everything they can to put disinformation into the air.
Well, so and the disinformation,
you got to get them out of office.
Yeah, absolutely. You got to vote, and the disinformation is what's killing us. I was going to bring up to you, I don't know how social you are on social media or how much you get to read other people's opinions, I will put it. But, you know, there's all these crazy conspiracy. Well, you know, in their mind, it's not a conspiracy. It's Bill Gates funded the coronavirus and George Soros funded Black Lives Matter. And is there no communication with these people? Is there no conversation to be had with these people? Are the only luck you and I going to have is talking to people that are on the fence and bringing them over?
Yeah, I mean, that's really true. I mean, look at Trump's numbers. The guy's numbers haven't changed very much.
Nope.
After what he does, he can't even hold the Bible up the right way. He tear gasses innocent citizens, which hopefully he's going to be sued for. And you see, he's got 36 to 38% of this country where he literally, like you said, could go down Fifth Avenue, shoot somebody in the head, and they would still love him.
He was right.
And that's not disinformation, but those people have been fed so much disinformation that they are basically, no matter what he does, they all think people are like you and me are out to get him. So disinformation is so dangerous, and the Senate is so... These Republican senators are so culpable. I mean, let's just be honest. They are fascists, and we are living in a time that if we do not stop now, we will be living under fascist laws. I mean, Tom Cotton is a senator from Arkansas, basically is calling for fascism, calling for the army to come into our cities and hurt our citizens. This guy's a fascist. I mean, the Times, you can read, I do read opinions quite a bit. And I don't always agree with the New York Times. And they printed his op-ed.
Yeah, they printed his op-ed, yeah.
And this guy is a fascist.
Yeah.
Stone cold. And that means he's a racist. And that means, you know, they are. And Mitch McConnell, we all know, is a racist.
Yeah.
We know Donald Trump's father was in Klan. The KKK.
Yeah.
So I mean, come on, man. We've got to fight. We've got to stand up. It's an exciting moment that we cannot let slip away again. Because then another black man is going to be, you know, killed, and they're going to get away.
Well,
we can't let the cops continue.
And
I don't want to preach about that.
I feel like we're very close to the fascist. I mean, there have been a lot of fascist things that have happened. And I feel like we're one step away from it being that way. And that is this November when we vote. If you don't vote this guy out by record numbers, if he doesn't lose by 10 million votes, you know he's going to fight leaving office. He's going to claim it's rigged.
Oh, for sure.
He's going to do whatever he has to do to throw out this election, to win this election, whatever it is. And at that point in time, if he wins that battle, we're in a fascist regime, officially.
Well, I think we sort of are already because he has the Justice Department.
Yeah.
William Barr will do whatever Donald Trump says. I mean, if Donald Trump says, get on your knees... blah, blah, blah. William Barr would do that. He would do anything.
Yeah.
You have Mike Pompeo in the State Department who will do anything to keep Trump in power.
Yeah.
So you have state. And now the question is, do you have the Supreme Court? You have four for sure hardcore federalists that don't believe in civil rights, don't believe in human rights. And you have John Robbins, who's like, I'm sorry, Roberts, who is now like, where are you going to go, John? What are you going to do? I mean, it's really scary.
Yeah, and it's sad when you have West Point graduates like Pompeo, who you're supposed to be fighting for America. you were trained to protect American citizens. Like I'm shocked that there isn't more of an, you know, we had Mathis, but I'm shocked there hasn't been more of a uproar over you want American troops to attack American citizens.
Oh man. Listen, man, I was out there in the streets in Brooklyn Friday and Saturday night. It was like nothing I've experienced, and I've filmed, wow, been in a lot of protests. I made a movie about Occupy Wall Street, and it was the most violent, hostile, crazy shit I've ever seen in the United States. Mm. And I'm not even talking about looting. I mean, but it was terrifying. And there was this little white girl from upstate New York who threw a Molotov cocktail at the cops to kind of get it going, and she did. She got it going, and it was terrible.
Oh my God.
So we also have to root these other people out, and we have to keep protesting until there's a true change. And you know, we can't go back to the way it was.
No, I got to imagine these protests and riots are going to continue through the election, and if God, oh God, I hope he does not win, but if he did, I think it's going to get worse. We can't do four more years of this, Fisher.
No. If he wins, it's over. I mean, the country's it's over.
Yeah,
it's over.
I really feel you're
getting
right
to that point right now. So, I don't know. And all these people, I think 47% of the American voting population voted.
Yeah.
47% last election.
Well, it better be more this election.
Still lost by 3 million votes, and he's still the president.
And he's still the president.
Representing the people, yeah.
I wanted to talk to you. We were talking about the coronavirus, and there were some filmmakers that were making movies when this started, or they were in post-production when this started. Did you were you able to get Palmer done in time before the coronavirus hit?
Yes, thank God.
That's great.
Palmer. It's very exciting. I can't wait.
That's Juno Temple and Justin Timberlake and June Squibb.
And June Squibb.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
Beautiful experience, and I can't wait till you see that, and then I can be on your show again.
Yeah, I would love that. When can we expect Palmer? What, like, because from what I understand, I have a couple TV shows in flux right now, and it's like we have no idea when we're going back to work.
Yeah, I have no idea either. But I think you'll see Palmer hopefully by the end of the year.
That's great.
Negotiating with studios, distributors, and you'll see it sooner. I mean, Succession, I don't know when we're coming back, so I'm waiting for that too, because I'm going to be on that this year. Very excited about, but obviously we have no idea when we're filming.
Tell me about Succession if you can, real quick. How'd that come about?
I met this guy named Mark Mylod, who is one of the main directors of the show. And we were talking about doing something together about the United Nations, because I film a lot with the United. I used to film a lot with them. And we got to be friends a little bit, and he asked me to just come on and do a part. And that little part just turned into this great part, and now next year it'll be an even better part.
That's so awesome, because that's an awesome – it's the hottest show to be on right now. And then you were involved in the other hottest thing ever this year too, Tiger King. Did you expect that to blow up the way it did?
No, I had no idea. I mean, I think coronavirus really helped. I knew it was going to be cool and big, and like people were going to be like, "What the fuck, Joe Exotic, Carol Baskin, they're the wildest people I ever seen." It was a combination, and I executive produced this other show I'm very proud of called Grant on History Channel. It's about Ulysses S. Grant.
That sounds awesome.
Malcolm Venville, my co-director of this, he directed that. And so we worked right. We went from Formula E to Grant. So we had a great run.
Is Grant already out?
Yeah, it was just on. It just broke the record for History Channel.
Oh, that's so cool. All right, I'm going to check it out.
Views. Yeah, check it out.
I'm going to check it out. I've been reading a lot about right now Teddy Roosevelt, but I would love to watch something about Grant. So That's awesome.
It's beautiful, and it's really sad that, you know, you'll see like how little times have changed. So,
well, I gotta tell you, man, Fisher, congratulations on the successful year professionally. I mean, what a crazy fucking year for you. You have like the hottest stuff going right now, but then personally, it's just got to be a disaster. What a dichotomy.
It's rough.
Yeah. Well, you have a fan here, and we.
It's rough for everybody.
Yeah.
I just say I am one of the lucky ones. So
yeah,
I feel grateful.
Yeah.
All this shit going on, I'm grateful to be a white male who has enough money to run away from a protest if I need to.
Yeah. Amen. Good for you. I'm glad you said that. It's important that we recognize and that we're self-aware of our privileges. Fisher, you're a great man, and I'm so glad you came on and did this again, and I'm your biggest fan, dude. So I thank you so much.
I appreciate it.
And we
thank
go
you.
Green.
Keep up the good work.
And we go green. Hulu.
Go green.
Right now, it is nonstop action. It is put it on the TV. Get your 5.1 sound going. It's intense. It's a lot of fun. Fisher Stevens, you're the best. Thank you, man. And let's talk
thank
when Palmer
you.
Comes out.
All right. See you soon.
Looking forward to it. Bye,
stay
buddy.
Safe.
You
keep
too.
Keep protesting. Stay safe.
Stay safe. Be prosperous. Talk soon.
All right. Bye-bye.